Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, the Lakers' 9-game winning streak died an honorable death in Detroit, 113 to 110, falling to the Pistons. D, it was a game. Lakers started out pretty well in the first quarter, very similar in terms of the flow to the Orlando game, in fact. I think they were up 27-23 after one. Really good defensive performance, I thought, in that first quarter, but as was the case in Orlando, their jump shooting was not there at all. The first half was the third time in LeBron's career that he went scoreless in a half. And yeah, just in general, Lakers' jump shooting was poor. It was another sub 30% from three type of game. But it was the second quarter that the Lakers really lost that game. I thought they gave up 42 points to the Pistons in a combination of transition runouts that were half good defense, half bad offense, and then they hit 5 of 7 threes, the Pistons did, in that third quarter and outscored the Lakers by, I think, 15 points there. That was the same quarter they kind of fell apart against Orlando. And it was not a game that I had very high expectations in terms of the Lakers winning that game. And so at halftime, I was like, I'll be pleasantly surprised if they kind of get back into this game. But that's exactly what they did. They made some adjustments in that third quarter. Detroit being one of the top teams in the NBA and being the number one seed in the East, I think kind of the way that it played out, there was more to learn from that game than I thought there would be. It was a really good competitive game. Dennis Jenkins really hurt the Lakers, had 30 points, hit a really nice step back jumper to put it away at the end. But the Lakers had their chances. Like I said, they fought back in that third quarter, were in it throughout the fourth. It was a tight game down the stretch. Sometimes it's a make or miss league. Luka front rims an elbow pull up. Jenkins hits that jumper. Tobias Harris tips LeBron's inbound pass to try to tie it up at the end. And that's that. Lakers lose by 3. It was a good game, a competitive game, and again, one that I thought the Lakers found some things against a style of team that I think Detroit's possibly our toughest matchup in the whole league relative to like how challenging they are to everybody, right? Of course, I think OKC is the best team in the league, but I think the Lakers have some advantages because our ball handlers are big. I think Detroit hits us in exactly all of the most difficult spots. And so some of the progress they made in that game, I was like, okay, we could use this against San Antonio, against Oklahoma City, against some of the competition they're gonna face in the West. What were your thoughts on last night's game? And we'll get into the end of the 9-game winning streak.
Yeah, if you were to tell me that Lakers shot clock essentially off, right? Even it's essentially even with the game clock heading into the final possession of the fourth quarter. Lakers have the ball with a full shot clock inbounds down by one. Luke has the ball in his hands with the chance essentially put the team up in this game 5 of a 6-game road trip in which the team had won the 4 previous games and on a 9-game win streak. Pistons shorthanded, but Lakers shorthanded too. I would have been like, sign me up.
Yep. Give me that every time. And it just didn't work out.
You don't even have to tell me all the details that you told me, which I think summarized the game very well. If you would have just told me exactly what I just said, I'd been like, give it to me and I'll take the results. And the Lakers lost and I take the results. We were talking some a little bit after we recorded the pod yesterday. And I had said, this sounds messed up, but I'm actually kind of hoping the Lakers lose a game soon. I had this logic and I said, this is galaxy brain stuff. So you can laugh me off the phone call right now. But I just feel like there's enough of the season left that I always feel like when a team goes on an extended winning streak, once they lose, they can sometimes get into a bit of a rut after their winning streak. And it can sometimes take them a little bit of time to get back their mojo. There's like an inherent letdown of we're not pushing for this thing anymore. The win, the vibes, and everything else. And what I didn't want to happen was for the Lakers to push this thing out to 15, 16, 17 games. And when you look at the schedule, it's like if they beat Detroit for 10 games.
That was going to be at least the 13 game winning streak. Yeah.
Right. So I was just like, oh, I'm not sure if I actually want this.
What's the downside? I mean, that sounds awesome to me as a Laker fan. Give me a 15, 16 game winning streak.
It does sound awesome. It's galaxy brain stuff. But I do think that if you get to three or four games left in the season and then they lose, are they going to instantly recapture that and be like, oh, we're wiping away and we're still going to be playing our best basketball heading into the playoffs? And so I sort of wanted there to be this natural reset of that's over and done with. We took our lumps or whatever, and now we can sort of get back to just playing regular basketball without this external thing sort of driving you towards something that in the end matters, but isn't as important as the bigger picture of really regulating yourself and getting ready for the postseason and what that entails, which is totally different than keeping alive a winning streak against a different team every night, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. And so much of this season, and I think they've done a very good job of it, despite some lamentations on my part, has been geared toward getting the team to the playoffs healthy. And we are like 10, 11 games away from being able to get there. And so if you do have that pressure of, oh crap, we can't lose this game, we got this long winning streak, it can sort of add a motivation that is a good thing, right? It's great to go on that, but you can sort of add a level of attrition to your team right before the playoffs that I think is harmful. That said, though, D, the Lakers, the next three games, literally play the three worst teams in basketball by record. I think that Indiana game might be a little tougher than we expect, but they should probably win those three games. I think they're in danger, though, of something similar happening for different reasons. And again, I don't love that they're playing three bad teams in a row, even though it's probably three wins. And part of that is because I think if you play too many bad teams in a row, you get kind of dragged down into bad basketball and you don't get punished for the mistakes that you make. You get sort of used to a level of not, you know, playing your best hoops. That I would love for the Lakers to still be able to retain this, because they played a good basketball game yesterday. They just couldn't throw pee in the ocean with their jumpers, which has been the case. And I think part of an interesting storyline as we go into the playoffs, like, I've loved watching them compete and how that impacts the offense. Like, not everybody can shoot when their legs are a little bit heavy, D. And I think that this is sort of a harbinger for the playoffs in terms of not that, oh, the Lakers won't make their jump shots, just that making jumpers when you're playing the style of basketball of, say, the first 50 games of the year is a different animal than competing with a team like Detroit that has the level of athleticism and physicality and all of that, and really standing toe-to-toe with them after Orlando, after Miami, after Houston, after Denver, after Minnesota, after the Knicks. They've played quite a few teams kind of in this constellation that really you have to bring that level of physicality to beat them. However, like, we've seen their jump shooting kind of drop off these last couple of games.
We have. And I think that that starts with Luka to a certain degree. We had talked about this a couple of pods ago, but that stretch where he was shooting 15 plus threes a night and making 45% of them, that's a huge, huge boost to your overall shooting profile. We can talk about, oh, Luke Kennard, Luke takes three threes a game, or four threes a game. If he goes 2 for 4 versus 1 for 3 and then goes 3 for 4 the next night, it's just like there's his 50%.
Sure.
But over the course of 4 games, he might not take the number of threes that Luka took in that second Rockets game.
What about LeBron and Austin, just purely as jump shooters? Because I get your point on Luka, and that's obviously going to be true. When we get those nights, it's going to happen. It's great when it does. You can't write it in pen that it's going to. But I do think that there's a certain, I don't want to say stability in Luka's jumper, just that there's going to be a level of volume, and we know he's going to take a certain number of shots, and it fits within a broader environment. LeBron and Austin's jumper, I feel like they're interesting within this idea in that LeBron and Austin's jumper, I think, can fluctuate in ways that impact the team. I'm just curious your thoughts on just their jump shooting in particular. Let's take a break here, come back and talk about it.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is more of a thing for Austin for me than it is for LeBron. I actually don't think LeBron's volume has really ever recovered to where it was pre-injury when he missed these last few games or even the two previous seasons before. And I think part of that is his change in role. And one of the things that LeBron's doing way more of, Pete, is driving closeouts or moving the ball on and making the extra pass. He's been doing that way more in this sort of adjusted role of being a lower usage player. And I think that that's impacted his overall shot volume. He's probably passing up 2, maybe 3 threes a game that would up his shot attempt profile from 12 or 13 to 15 or 16. But I think that he's doing it in service of team basketball and in service of trying to get a better look. And also the fact that he's been a high 20s, low 30s three-point shooter this season.
That's what it is to me. Like, sometimes the team basketball is taking what the open shot is because you're not going to get a better look than that. That for me is honestly a bigger concern, is that, to your point, LeBron's taking fewer threes per game than he has since the 2015-16 season. It's 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I think earlier in the year, I would say that it was 70-30 is my jumper there. And now I think it's more like 50-50. I do think it's lingering in his head this year more that his jumper's not where he necessarily wants it to be. And he can talk as much about trusting the work. And I believe that he believes when he says that stuff that it's true. But the proof is in the pudding. That said, I do think LeBron is, as much as he can, embracing this shift in his role. And I think it is leading to him swing. I saw him pass up an open three just during the win streak multiple times, passing up an open three in order to pitch the ball back to Austin or pitch the ball back to Luka. And then LeBron's turning down a open three to turn it into a wide open three for Luka or Austin. And I'm fine with that calculus. And I trust that LeBron too isn't going to be the guy who passes up an open three to give Vando a wide open three, which is something that Luke Kennard does, for example, or taking a semi-contested three and turning that into an open three for a lesser shooter. So I put LeBron in a different category with Austin when it comes to this. The Lakers need Austin to be a certain level of shooter, and when his shooter dips below that level, it impacts the team's offense. Austin is now the second usage player for the team. He is the guy who's almost always going to take the second highest number of shot attempts. And based off of his style of play, there's going to be a certain volume of off the dribble threes. When his off the dribble three is falling, the Lakers are a much higher caliber offensive team. And that's with Luka rolling. It's like you've got two of Luka, you don't, but you know what I mean. It's just like, oh man, and Austin's doing this too. So I do have concerns when the three isn't falling or when he's on one of those streaks where it's like, okay, he's hit two of his last 12 threes or three of his last 15, and he'll have stretches like that. How much of a concern is it for you that his jump shooting can be as volatile as it is?
It's funny. I actually have the opposite perspective of you. Is I think it's more important with LeBron than it is with Austin.
Interesting.
So for one, this has always been the jump shooter that Austin is, in that when he loses it, he just loses it. And you'll see him airball wide open looks or barely hit the rim when he loses his feel for it. It's just part of the player that he is, and that's going to come and go. I really loved the second half of that game, both how he played, but also his utilization. The Lakers went to more LeBron as the ball handler and Austin as the screener, but Austin was getting the ball, right? Like the point of the play was let's get Austin the ball, but just in a different way. And that game I was talking earlier about, there were signs of progress that I weren't expecting in that particular game. The biggest part of it for me was Austin's utilization. We did see several possessions where he gets picked up at half court. He's getting harassed and harangued. He turns the ball over. You know, something good doesn't happen out of it. Or he made this nasty crossover and thought, hey, I have a lane all the way to the rack. And then Asar Thompson met him at the rim and swatted it away, where it was like, just shoot the floater, pull up for the midi, right? You have that right there, but he didn't see it. And it's way more about like leaning into the versatility of what Austin and LeBron can do. And if they have a strength, for example, of pressuring the ball off of the dribble on the perimeter, let's get the ball to Austin in a different way. Let's get him to shake free in a way where he didn't have to have the ball in his hands to do it in the first place. And yes, still get him the ball, still get him downhill, but choose from a whole different menu of plays. And so that level of versatility was super important to see, that bringing it back to the jump shooting, that I think that so long as he's doing that, that sort of buttresses the natural fluctuation that there's going to be in that respect. With LeBron, however, him having less sort of off the dribble juice makes for me those wide open type of shots much more important, in part too because he's also a hub. He had 10 assists in last night's game. He had a very Draymond-y type of stat line for much of the night. He was like 0 points, 8 assists and 5 rebounds or something like that. And what happens is when you're a hub like that, and this happens with Draymond, is everybody's looking for the pass that you're going to make, and so they'll sag off of you. That's when you want to be able to dot that jumper off of that triple threat as well. And so if LeBron can get his jumper back, I have not given up on that, right? I think there's going to be a certain fluctuation with Austin, but I think that getting back to just, I don't know, can he get to 35% on 5 attempts type of thing? I think that'd help a lot.
I agree. It will help a lot. And I expect LeBron to stabilize as a shooter in a way where that 35% is totally realistic. And I sort of expect him to be that level of shooter during the playoffs.
Okay.
The reason why I'm saying that it matters less to me is just because the opportunities are going to be less for LeBron in this exact way. And that menu that you're talking about in terms of like play options, LeBron's connective passing and his ability to drive and like stampede cut a lot of times off of the actions where Luka and Austin are exhibiting a certain amount of perimeter gravity. I think the totality of LeBron's game allows him to still thrive in the exact ways that you were talking about how Austin can thrive. But that's LeBron James instead.
Sure. And he's bigger and a better athlete.
Yeah, he's bigger. He's stronger. He's a better athlete. Like all of that stuff. He's a better passer. He sees things a play ahead. There's just more there for LeBron to sort of grasp onto. If he could be like a Rui level shooter is probably too much to ask this season, but he's been that in the past in terms of spot up shots. If LeBron is comfortable taking and then making the spot up jumpers that are going to be available to him, it is going to help boost the Lakers offense. But if Austin is suddenly, if he can go on a hot streak at the right time, then I think it makes the Lakers unbelievably dangerous from an offensive ceiling perspective. I just think that you're talking about now your second highest used player being a high-level three-point shooter. The off-the-dribble threes that Austin is going to take are super valuable shots within the context of half-court offense. As much as you'd love to be able to say, Pete, like, well, we're getting these spot-up opportunities for LeBron, the guy who has the ball, the off-the-dribble three, that's the one that the defense is just like, that's what's available to you right now. You're not going to be able to create wide-open spot-up jumpers play after play after play, even for LeBron James, but you will be able to, I think, find an off-the-dribble three, and that may be the best shot available to you on any given possession.
I'm curious if you think Austin can get his game off in that way against the Detroits and OKCs and San Antonios and all of that. Let's go to break here. Come back and talk about that.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is the next mountain to summit and really one of the key questions of the season, because if Austin can, that locks a lot of different things into place. But in yesterday's game, only two of his seven baskets were on the ball in the half court. He had one transition layup that was also on the ball, but it was a couple of catch and shoot threes. He had a nice backdoor cut for a layup that LeBron hit him on. It had some nice playmaking as well. Also used some kind of combination passes that, again, were different ways of getting the pressure off of him. But I view his offensive game, like really last night, as a template game for him in a lot of ways. He is such a complete player that I think the more we lean into him being an overall type of scorer and an overall type of threat, rather than a, we're going to give you the ball and you're going to break down this set defense in a 5-on-5, I think that's way more of the path to getting exactly the type of numbers that we're looking for out of him.
I think that that's right. I will say, though, the versatility of his game means that he can lean into these other aspects, and I think he's going to have to find these other aspects. I guess what I'm saying is, on the nights where he does need to take and make that shot, I want him to be able to take and make it. It's a critical part of being the quote-unquote number two guy, because there's going to be nights too, Pete, where it's just like, no, the off-ball stuff isn't going to be there for him either, based off of the coverages that he sees or who is lurking in the paint and what rim protection stuff looks like. There's just factors that allow you to be like, no, we're going under on Austin screens tonight. Mm-hmm. We're not getting beat off of drives. He's going to have to prove that he can make the pull-up three in this game. And those are the games where the versatility of what you're talking about, it goes in the other direction. And I think that if you try to turn any one player into any one thing and they can't do that one thing, then that's it. Game over for this guy.
Well, that's the thing too, is that like Austin can very much do this one thing. It's just for me asking him to sustain it at the highest levels of competition. If we are set up in a way where he has to be able to do that for the whole thing to be able to function, I think we're in a tough spot.
Yeah, but they're not set up that way. Is my point.
No.
And I think that your point of they still have LeBron is a super important one. And this was sort of the ethos of the post that I wrote about LeBron, is he's thriving in this lower usage role, and his adaptability and like unrivaled versatility as a player allows him to evolve and then also in the moment adapt to anything. And I think we saw that in the Pistons game. It's like his scoring wasn't necessarily there, but he became way more of an on-ball player from the perimeter. He was, again, backing into post-ups, again, a lot more against a variety of defenders. And he was a pick-and-roll ball handler with Austin being the screener. And it was a different mindset for LeBron. He wasn't doing that in order to, like, get himself downhill. He was doing it to get Austin downhill. And this is where I think the Lakers are going to need to tap into some of that stuff, but that's as much a LeBron question as it is an Austin question.
Yes, it is. We should really be talking about this in tandem in a lot of ways, D, and that might not just fluctuate from one night to the next. It might fluctuate from one quarter of possession to the next.
Yeah, one shift to the next. Who's on the court for the opponent? I look at a team like San Antonio, for example. They, to me, are a mix of Detroit and OKC. In that, mm-hmm. like,
agreed.
A player like Castle is just, like, bigger. He's not quite as big as Asar Thompson, but he's closer to Asar Thompson than he is to Kayson Wallace.
Agreed.
Right? And so his ability to be a bigger defensive player gives him a bit more versatility against the Lakers' jumbo initiators, for example. And so if you put Castle on Austin, it's sort of just like, okay, well, you were deploying a certain amount of size on him the way that the Pistons did with Thompson and putting him on Austin as well. Okay, well, then who does that leave for LeBron? Against the Pistons, it was, okay, well, we're going to put Tobias Harris on him, or we're going to put Javonte Green on him. Green's a little bit smaller, but we're willing to live with that. San Antonio is going to be like, okay, well, can Devin Vassell do that job? I don't know. Can Keldon Johnson? Maybe a little bit closer. Okay, here's Harrison Barnes. Well, that's a little bit more his size, right? But it's just like in those matchups, it's clearly LeBron who has the more favorable matchup than Austin if it's Castle that's on Austin versus Harrison Barnes that's on LeBron. So in those instances, do you start to go in the other direction? Whereas, oh, well, no, in this shift, it's actually De'Aaron Fox that's on Austin. And it's Stephen Castle that has to guard LeBron. Well, in those instances, then maybe it's back to Austin cooking. And I think that this is where, of all of the two-man pairings or combinations with on the Lakers, they have the most time together played and the most inherent and natural chemistry. I think this bodes well for the Lakers to be able to figure things out on the fly in the units with those two guys. I also think it was telling that against Detroit, they really did go back to the old school model of, no, this is an Austin and LeBron lineup, driving start of the second quarter unit, start of the fourth quarter units. They went back to that. I think JJ read it correctly as to they've got too much defensive personnel on this team to leave LeBron out there by himself. And the Lakers were shorthanded as well without Marcus and Rui, that I think they needed that offensive boost that those two guys were going to provide as a duo.
They certainly did. And I do think that we'll continue to see those being Austin and LeBron groups, but it's been spotty in terms of their performance. That group wasn't good to start the second quarter. That was part of where the Lakers really lost the rope. That unit in particular has had difficulty scoring. And then to start the fourth quarter, how many times did they turn the ball over in the first 4 or 5 minutes of that fourth quarter, which is those same minutes when Luka's off the floor and you're going through Austin and LeBron? And so before we wrap up, D, I'd just love your thoughts on like getting the best offense out of those units that don't have Luka on it, but do have those two. They have that continuity, but they haven't really clicked in those units quite yet this season.
This is where I think Detroit and against Detroit specifically, but I think in bigger picture, the sensitivity of those lineups is higher than it's ever been.
than it was in like previous seasons. And I think totally one of agree. The ingredients that those groups need, particularly against high ball pressure teams, are another guy who could reliably handle the ball. Both LeBron and Austin can be ball pressured full court. I think this is where the Lakers missing Marcus matter in this game, because I do think, Pete, that his ability to sort of be a quasi point guard and bring the ball up, even if it's just to then kick the ball off to somebody else, that matters. And they didn't trust Jake or Luke or any of the other guys to do that against Detroit's ball pressure. And so I thought that mattered against the Pistons, even way more than like what missing Rui mattered, even though I thought they missed Rui too.
Yeah, LeBron's going to draw a primary defender. Austin's going to draw somebody. And what ends up happening is by the time you get to Marcus, it's like, that guy can't pressure Marcus's handle. He's your third best guy on the court in terms of perimeter ball pressure that he's not that great at. That Marcus, that's what he's done his whole life up to the NBA, was play point guard. And him being able to do that, and you know, if you put somebody small on him, he can get an early offense bucket out of that and just do just enough of that really helps. And he was certainly missed last night, D.
Yeah, and so this leads me back to reflecting on the win streak in general. 9 games against a bunch of really good teams. And I didn't say this at the top when I was talking about almost looking forward to when the streak would end so that the team could reset. To me, this is the perfect sort of loss to experience. And post-game, I thought LeBron's comments about the team showing resiliency and like fighting back the way that they have, this is as much of an identity loss as you can have an identity win. One of the things that I thought was happening too much earlier in the season was a topic that we hit on yesterday's pod, which was that idea of we're down by 15. If we lose by 20, we lose by 20. And I think during this stretch, and I heard Mike do a sideline hit about this during the game, was the number of times in which the Lakers led at halftime. Right, which is when Mike gets to do his little hit with JJ before they go into the locker room. And he was just like, I think to this point at the Pistons game, they'd only done that once or twice, maybe out of the 5 games. So they hadn't really been leading. And so it'd been a lot of, okay, adjustments, overcoming something, coming back, really showing out well in the second half. And that's exactly what they did against the Pistons. And they fell short. Didn't work out at the end, but the idea of playing to what you want to be, even in a loss, is an idea that I really think resonates with me as like a fan as well. I didn't want the Lakers to fall off a cliff and lose. I didn't want them to come out there and like not play hard at all. No, man, they ended up in a clutch game, a one possession game, and they lost. I hope, and I kind of expected at this point, for them to take their lumps from this and come back and be ready to play the next game. That to me is the lesson of the win streak as much as like being the joy from the wins. It's like all of those things that they've learned and the habits that they've reinforced that I think matter a great deal.
Last thing I want to say is just a shout out to the coaching staff. I think that the pattern that you pointed out about how they'd barely been ahead at halftime against many of these teams in the winning streak and them coming out in the second half and really opening up a lead being a pattern that we've seen over and over again. That and late game ATOs, I thought they did a great job in this game as well. Didn't end up working out, but for example, the play that gave them the lead prior to Jenkins' jumper, they went small out of a timeout and 5 out and spread the floor just so that they could get Austin one-on-one with Jenkins. And that was one of his 2 on-ball buckets in the half court, was he went one-on-one against Jenkins. And just time and time again, they've found kind of these late game ATOs that have really gotten guys open, and also found second half adjustments like the, hey, let's go back to LeBron as the on-ball player and Austin as a screener, but really look to hit Austin on the short roll out of that and have him attack out of that. I think they've just been really pressing a lot of the right buttons in ways that illustrate, I think, an understanding of the roster that they have. I'm just excited to see that type of progress because I think the playoff application of it is significant. So I'm going to wrap up here. Great win streak. Sorry to see it end. We will be back tomorrow. Talk more Lakers, maybe a little around the NBA as well. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. They win. Lakers. play. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.